is The Huddle.
This is our dish. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are going to go in the trenches with Ray Roberts, who joins us right now. What's up, Ray?
You guys are, man. Just hey, I'm just in your world trying to find space to operate.
Well, we're glad that you're here.
Find space. You're the one that's moving everybody out of the way, Ray.
I do my best.
I thought that this would be not just every day is a good day to have you on, but man, I know that you love talking about the offensive line and getting involved with the run game. What'd you make of how the Seahawks came out in the third quarter against the Steelers?
Yeah, it was. I was excited they did. You know, when we did our halftime show on the pregame with our pregame postgame crew, you know, I didn't even realize that we had only carried the ball four times, and those four rushes came in the first quarter. And so there were some things in the second quarter that may have taken you out of the opportunity to run because there were some penalties and a couple sacks that kind of put you behind the chains a little bit. But Alex Collins was averaging almost 5 yards a carry at halftime. And so then the frustrating thing was, you know, last year there were times where Chris Carson was averaging almost 6 yards a carry at halftime and then never, you know, then maybe touched the ball five or six times the rest of the game. So it was really good to see them come out and recognize that they had some value in that, you know, that with that part of the game. And they ended up running the ball like 7 out of 8 times or 8 out of 9 times and scoring a touchdown. And, you know, the one thing I try to speak to is that I don't think people understand, and I say this all the time, how the mindset of an offensive lineman, what the mindset is. And people just think that it's just big dudes running into big dudes and all the focus is on the guy that's throwing the ball and the dudes that are catching it. And so you get caught up into their rhythm and their, you know, timing and all that kind of stuff in their mindset, but you don't consider the mindset of offensive lineman. And you can, by running the ball, whether it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust or you're averaging 6 yards a carry, you're giving me tools in my box, in my toolbox, to be better at what I do. Because otherwise, if I'm going to drop back and throw it 40 times, you're making me super one-dimensional. And it's really the game plan. It's really easy to game plan for a person when there's only one thing that they're going to be bringing at me. And so I thought it was important for the mindset. And I think it was probably like an important step just for that offensive line in general.
Yeah, I remember listening to you guys on the pregame show a couple weeks ago, Ray, where Brandon Staley, the head coach of the Chargers, talked about, you know, you force mm-hmm. a defense to play blocks. You force them, you know, to have to tackle. I think it's the mindset is important. I wanted to ask you about Rashad Penny. What you see from him? I mean, he's one of those kind of lightning rod players where, you know, you've seen some good stuff from him, and then, you know, he just has never really gotten going. What's your level of confidence? What have you seen from Rashad Penny?
Well, I think when he's healthy, and obviously, and when he is he's really sure of what the value is that he brings to the team. I think early in his career, he wanted, you know, people wanted him to be this big, fast running back, but run like Chris Carson. And that's not who he is. He's not a dude that's going to move the pile when he hits it. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, see a 2-inch, you know, crease and then explode through it for 15 yards. He's a big dude and he can do that, but that's not what he does. He's more of a, you know, like a want to bounce it to the outside, get him out in space, like that type of dude to use his athleticism and his quickness and his speed. And so in the times when I've seen him be successful is when he's played like that. And so I think, you know, whenever he's back, you can't expect him to be Chris Carson. You have to let him be Rashad Penny and then put him in situations to be successful doing that. It reminds me of Rawls when he was playing and everybody wanted him to be Marshawn Lynch. And the dude just wasn't built to be Marshawn Lynch. There's only one person built to be Marshawn Lynch, and that's Marshawn Lynch. And Thomas Rawls was not him. And as a result of it, his career didn't last long because his body couldn't hold up to it, and he could never quite find that thing that Marshawn had. But I'm sure he had other skill sets that would have been valuable to the team had they exploited those.
Ray, I heard you on earlier this week on our airwaves talking about, you know, the offensive line not playing together in the preseason and how, you know, it might have manifested itself in the early part of this season. I have to 100% agree when you talk about the transition about Damian Lewis playing left guard. Gabe Jackson mm-hmm. now is fit in new. He's a new player, a great player, but a new player at right guard. You look at Kyle Fuller, who's now your center, and him getting full-time work. What did you see from this group in the second half of the Steelers game? I mean, what I saw was a bunch of combo blocks working out very well together. Do you think that they have kind of found their chemistry here, Ray, or was it just the box number that they were facing versus the Steelers that played out favorably to them?
Well, I certainly hope they did, Jake, because to me, that for this offensive line, everything you just said has been the problem. Because they didn't have those reps together, not even in practice, because Dwayne Brown wasn't practicing. And then even Brandon Schell last year missed a lot of time. So it's almost like he's kind of reintroducing himself to the offensive line. He missed time in the preseason practices. You know, and so there's a lot of reps around chemistry and working beside each other that they missed because the choice to not play them in the games, and then a lot of the pieces not being present during training camp. So now they're trying to work those things out. And it seems as if in the second half, some of those things started clicking. You know, you get the push that the guard in the center, the two guards in the center were getting in the middle of the offensive line. That's what makes the zone blocking scheme go, is when you can get push in the middle. Up until this point, they weren't getting a whole lot of push. There was a lot of stalemating at the line of scrimmage, which means that then guys aren't getting up to the next level. In the second half, you saw push, and then Kyle Fuller was doing a great job getting up to the next level. One of the things I liked about Gabe Jackson and watching his film was that he was great at setting the double team and then sliding up to the next level with the leverage so that the play could be successful. Hadn't seen any of that until the second half of this game. And so I'm hoping that was a light bulb moment for this offensive line, because I get tired of the talk of like, oh man, we need to invest in the offensive line and look at this team's offensive line and that team has elite talent and we don't. You have three players on this offensive line that have Pro Bowl potential. You have, you know, Damian Lewis, who had a very good rookie year and you were expecting great things from him this year. You have Gabe, who came with a really great reputation from the Raiders and having played, you know, really good football down there. And then obviously you have Dwayne Brown, who's probably a future Hall of Famer. And so there are three dudes that are Pro Bowl caliber players on this offensive line, but they hadn't been playing like that. And I think a lot of it is because of all the missed reps in the preseason.
Ray, there is no secret as to what these Seahawks are going to do on Monday. It has been a big proclamation from Pete Carroll that they are going to run the football. This is who they're going to be. And it's going to be no secret to the New Orleans Saints, who have a good front seven. My question to you is, you mentioned those three guys, you mentioned the caliber and the talent that this group has. Can they be that group? Can they be that group where they're so dominant, so good, that doesn't matter what everybody else in the building knows what's coming, that they can still move the pile and get it done? Because that's what it's going to take on Monday, Ray.
Absolutely. And I'll just put it to you this way, Jake. Like, you saying it like that, dude, I wish I could go suit up right now. Like, like I guarantee you that in the offensive line room, like, I just stood up so I could tell you this. And nobody's even here in my apartment but me. Put it on our shoulders to be that. And having said all of that, Jake, some of the problem with the conversation around Pete Carroll and this offense here is that it's either one or the other. Like, oh, he just wants to run the ball. We just want to pass the ball. The secret and the sauce is finding the synergy of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So neither one of them in and of itself is going to survive and take this team anywhere. So the thing that they have to do is find the synergy. And the reason I use synergy, because when you use balance, people think, oh, it has to be 25 runs and 25 passes. Synergy just means that we have to find the combination that works so that this offense works. So if it means running 25 times and passing 25 times, then maybe that's it. If it means running it 15 times, but we're averaging 15 yards a carry, but we're using play action pass and we're putting all these other things and the quarterback is hot and we throw it 40 times, then that's the synergy. But you cannot have an offense where it's just like we're going to just drop back and throw it 40 times a game and win. There's even Patrick Mahomes 2 years ago wanted to draft a running back. They called him and said, who do you want to take? He wanted the running back that they drafted. He didn't ask for another receiver. He asked for a running back. And so running the football is part of the offense. Throwing the football, part of the offense. But throwing the football isn't the offense, and running the football isn't the offense. It's a combination of the two.
He is Ray Roberts, former Seahawk and current NFL analyst on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, so make sure you tune in to hear him on Monday night. Ray, enjoy your weekend.
I'm going to try to, because now Jake got me so fired up that I think I'm going to get it. You know, I have some pretty big pillows on my couch, and I might just set up my own, like, seven-man blocking sled and take some reps. So if y'all...
There we go.
If y'all hear that I'm in the hospital at the end of the day, just know that that's
it's not worried, bubble weekend.
I'm worried
bubble.
About the drywall in Ray's home right
getting
now.
Getting fired up. Let's go. All right, Ray. Good talking to you, man.
Thanks, Ray.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too. What are the keys to a Seahawks win against the Saints on Monday night? We'll ask the voice of the Seahawks himself, Steve Rabel, next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You don't watch The Bachelorette, Wyman? No? Not your type of show?
Not anymore.
Used to. This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. It is your two-hour preview show getting you ready for the Monday night Week 7 game between the Seahawks and the Saints. Joining us now, the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Rabes, what's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're good. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating one for Seattle. You have a number two ranked run defense against a team that really wants to run the ball. We're going to see who wins that battle. You've got a defense that's susceptible to the pass, and you can see what Geno does. I mean, there's all kinds of fascinating conversations, and that means there's all kinds of keys. So I'm going to start kind of with what would normally be our final question, but what's one of the big keys to the game for you for the Seahawks?
Gosh, there's so many, and you know, you can get down to real specifics, and I know Dave and I will talk about this come Monday evening in the booth leading into the game. You know, and there are some that are pretty obvious. I mean, a guy like Alvin Kamara, I mean, he can beat you so many ways. And so every defense that Pete Carroll has ever coached goes into the game saying we have to stop the run. But in the case of Alvin Kamara, you got to stop the run. You got to stop the swing pass. You got to stop the wheel route up the sidelines with this guy because he can catch the ball and run. I mean, he's kind of a one-man wrecking crew in that way. I think what ultimately you're going to have to consider on Monday night is, A, it's going to be a lousy night weather-wise. It looks like we're going to have wind and rain. You have to make sure going in that you're obviously sound on your assignments. And then avoid the big mistakes. Sometimes it's the team that makes the fewest mistakes as opposed to make the biggest plays. If you can avoid mistakes, like if you're Geno Smith, ball's going to be wet. Be careful where you're throwing it. Don't throw into a crowd. Don't think you can force that ball in there on a wet, you know, wet, breezy night. Be safe with the football. Don't give them an opportunity. This team has, what, 9 interceptions already, the Saints do, this season. So they're pretty good at taking the ball away. I'd one of the things I'd go in saying is we have to minimize those mistakes. And then, you know, for our part on defense, go out there and make things happen. Take that ball away.
Hey, Steve, how did you feel? You know, it's funny, last week or this entire week we've been talking about the Steelers game, and I felt like they took a couple of steps forward. I mean, I know they're 2-4. Obviously, when they lose, it's not a good thing, but I felt like, you know, running the ball, I thought Geno, you know, he made a throw over the linebacker and underneath the safety. You saw the touchdown throw to DK Metcalf. I feel like he kind of proved that he can go out and win games for you. I felt kind of positive coming out of that loss, which was kind of strange.
Well, and I agree, Dave. And I felt positive, too, because it wasn't all on Geno's shoulders. Even though after the game he took all of the blame on himself. He said, I've got to do better. I lost the game. I can't let that happen. Well, no, you didn't, Geno. You fumbled the ball at the end, trying to make a play under pressure in overtime. And against a guy who, in all likelihood, is going to be right there at the end of the season when they talk about defensive players of the year. If we never see Watt again, either one of them, any of the Watts,
yeah.
You know, it'll be too soon. But, they did make progress. I think the fact that they came out in the second half knowing that Pete said it in the locker room at halftime, we have got to run the football. We got to take some pressure off of Geno. He's getting sacked. We got to get back to what we do, and they did. And I think that was a really big improvement by this team. The offensive line fired off the line of scrimmage. They opened big holes. Alex Collins was just terrific. And I think, you know, you build on that. You keep looking into this coming week. You look at Monday night and see a Rams or a Saints team that's tough defensively. I mean, just a couple years ago, we were talking about them with Drew Brees. Now all of a sudden, it's a defensive built kind of team. So I think that's something we learned from these guys, the Seahawks, so that they can do those sorts of things when they put their mind to it. They've got the physical ability to do it. And on the other side of the ball, I thought they did a pretty good job against Najee Harris. There's a guy who's like a load to stop, and I thought they did a pretty good job defensively in holding him down as well.
Rabes, there's it can't go understated how big this game is in terms of the outcome for the rest of the season. I can't believe we're talking about that at this point of the season. You know, going 1-2 during the stretch was not the goal. 2-1, 3-0, that was more of the conversation. How do you think that the players and everybody in that building feel that sense of urgency in terms of this, how important this Monday night game is?
I don't think there's any way they can't feel that sense of urgency. But then again, you have to, and that's part of being a pro. You were a pro. Dave was a pro. Stacy's a pro. You understand
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You understand that you have to put that behind you at that point. You had your Tell the Truth Monday. You look back at the video. Those guys, I'm sure, saw the game on the plane coming back from Pittsburgh and saw how close they were to beating a pretty good team. More importantly than how good the Steelers are, just beating them there at home would have been just a terrific feather in their cap. All that said, they didn't do it. So I don't think you can help but feel that kind of pressure of where your record is, and knowing that, you know, the further down that road you go by losing football games, the tougher it's going to be in the second half of the season, where you have gotten in the past, where you've done really well, and where Pete preaches, you know, you can't win it in the first or second or third quarters, but you win it in the fourth quarter. You may just put yourself out of the running if you're not making the plays you need to make now and win football games. So yeah, they feel the pressure, I think, but hey, if anybody can get them focused on one game at a time, it's the guy who preaches it every single day, and that's Pete.
Hey, one final question here. I know that we have a lot to dissect with this team, and not a lot of it is good right now. So if you do have to pick something that's been good or maybe just a pleasant surprise for you, is there a player or a theme that's been?
Well, on the offensive side, I think Geno has proven to everybody that if not that one half played where Russ got hurt, or the entire game against Pittsburgh, you know, under a lot of pressure, sacked five times, still was able to get some passes off, played well, had a good showing that way. That on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I'm kind of excited now to see Trey Brown. I mean, I almost jumped out of my shoes on that play where he came up as a cornerback. And, you know, quite frankly, we haven't seen much of that this season, where he knew exactly what he had to do, come up and make that tackle behind the line of scrimmage and keep Johnson, I think it was Dante Johnson, from getting a first down. I mean, it was as good a play as I've seen out of our cornerbacks in a while.
Yeah, so I was there, and I thought the Seahawks had scored or something the way you described that play.
It was a great
call. Brown. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, hey, you thank goodness for small favors, right? You look for those little things sometimes, and that at that moment in the game was a really big thing. So yeah. I expect we're going to see a lot more of him. Pete said as much. He said he's earned the right to play and get his snaps. And, you know, it may not be all that long before he's really comfortable with having a young rookie starting out there at cornerback. If he feels like this guy can make plays, he'll put him out there.
Well, I can't wait to see if he's able to get a pick this season. And if that's the case, I can't wait to hear your call on it. I'm excited about that personally. He is the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Thanks so much, Rabes.
Yeah, I'm liable to come unglued if that happens.
I can't wait. I can't wait. All right, what's making the Saints tick right now? What do they do well, and what are their weaknesses? We're going to take a step across enemy lines with John DeShazier, a reporter for the New Orleans Saints, next.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Here to help us take a step over enemy lines and give us an opponent preview is John DeShazier, reporter for the New Orleans Saints. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
We're fantastic. John, look, I'm starting this on a bit of a hostile tone, but there's no hostility intended with it, which is to say that when I was looking at kind of my own preseason rankings of where I saw things falling, I did not see the New Orleans Saints as a team that was going to have a better record than the Seahawks this early into the season. But I also didn't anticipate what was happening for Seattle. And part of that, John, is because I thought that this New Orleans Saints team had a big degree of variance. It could either work out well because they had a lot of stars, or it could completely collapse without Drew Brees. Right now, they're sitting at 3-2, second in the NFC South. What's been working out for them?
Well, first, I'm completely offended, so the next thing you will hear will be the dial tone. what's worked out is the defense. They had a pretty good defense last year, and I think those guys knew they needed to step it up a notch this year, and they've done so. Now, in the two losses, you can't tell, obviously. Gave up 400 passing yards to Daniel Jones and the Giants, and didn't do very well against Sam Darnold in Carolina. But really, for the most part, the defense has been the linchpin for this team. It carried the team, really, a couple of times the previous two seasons. A couple of seasons ago, Drew Brees got injured for a five-game stretch. Teddy Bridgewater went 5-0 as the quarterback, but the defense led the way then. And then last year, Drew Brees got hurt and missed four games. Taysom Hill started when he was 3-1, but the defense led the way then. So they've been building this way, really, since that 2017 draft. A lot of people put a lot of emphasis on Alvin Kamara coming out of that draft, and rightfully so. But their first pick was Marshon Lattimore, the cornerback. Another pick high, Marcus Williams, the safety. So they've really done some things defensively to try to bolster this team and get it better. So, you know, because I think obviously they knew a day was going to come when there would not be Drew Brees, and you couldn't depend on, you know, those 28 to 35 point games. You would have to be able to defend better, and I think they prepared well for that day. So, you know, they've been pretty conservative offensively, and then they've just kind of relied on the defense, and it's been a pretty good recipe for them so far. Now, I think there's going to be a little bit more loosening of the offense as Jameis Winston gets a little bit more attuned to what he can and can't do in this offense. But for the most part, this team knew, I think, coming into the season, it was going to be led by the defense, and so far it has been.
Now, John, I wanted to go a little bit more on Jameis Winston in this offense, and you mentioned maybe it getting loosened up. I mean, since he has earned potentially the trust of Sean Payton, going 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, how has he looked to you guys so far this season, and doing it without two key starters, two key pass catchers? Are those guys set to come back in Michael Thomas and Tre'Quan Smith?
Well, Tre'Quan comes off the IR, so he's going to begin practicing. So he'll be back before Michael Thomas. No word yet on Michael Thomas. But the biggest thing with Jameis is we've seen the decision-making be altered, be different than past years. He doesn't feel like he needs to play hero ball, so he'll throw it away. He might take a sack. He's shown some mobility in the pocket. I think a little bit more. You know, we saw it in Tampa, I guess, and maybe it was one of those things that you kind of lose track of, but he's been a little bit more mobile than we thought. But really, it's the decision-making. Now, look, he's gotten away with a couple that might have been otherwise picks that turned out to be touchdowns. He had a Hail Mary touchdown. He threw a couple to Marquez Callaway that might otherwise have been interceptions, or one to Juwan Johnson that otherwise might not have been, you know, the best decision in the world. You know, you get away with some of those. But he also had a couple of decisions that went against him to go for those three interceptions. But for the most part, his decision-making has been solid across the board. And that's the main thing. I think he understands better, having sat behind Drew Brees, that sometimes the best play is nothing, to take that sack and put your defense back out there and see if they'll get the ball back for you, or to throw it away. And instead of being, you know, having an interception, go to third and 10 and see if you can collect the yards on third down. But I think he's understanding better as he's growing in this offense. You know, it's okay to throw it away. It's okay to take a sack. You just don't want the turnover. And that's the main thing.
Hey, John, here we're anticipating that the big matchup we're looking at is Pete Carroll's desire to really pound the rock and really run the ball in this one against the Saints' number two overall rushing defense. Who have been some key figures in that running defense?
Well, mainly it's been DeMario Davis, the linebacker, Pete Werner, the rookie linebacker. They've had some pretty good play at defensive tackle because they've really had to have some guys step up at defensive tackle without David Onyemata, who arguably is the best defensive lineman on this team. But, you know, Peyton Turner, the rookie, Marcus Davenport, who might be coming back off IR this week. They've had some guys who really played the run well. And basically that's what the Saints want to do. They want to make you one-dimensional. They want to make you have to throw it so that they can anticipate a little bit better. They can unleash the pass rush, and even though they only have eight sacks, it's the hits on the quarterback. It's the hurrying of the quarterback. It's the getting him off his marks that has led to them creating the turnovers more so than the quarterback sacks. So, and you know, trust me, they'll trade out the sacks for the turnovers every day of the week, and that's what they've been able to do. But it all begins with making you one-dimensional. They have been able to play the run well really for the last – I guess 3-4 years, they've probably been the top two or three in run defense, and that's really the key to what they want to do. And the teams that beat them or the teams that give them trouble are the teams that have been able to run it. Carolina with Christian McCaffrey, and then the Giants had Saquon Barkley, who was able to get loose a little bit late in that game. So if you can run the ball against any NFL team, of course, you can have success. But, you know, the Saints really rely on stopping that run, making you one-dimensional, and then really making up for it in the pass game. They don't necessarily mind so much, you know, giving up the yards. It's the points, and especially when they get to the red zone, they want to be able to slow you down there and force field goals if they can't get turnovers out of you.
John, everybody focuses on the stars. Everybody focuses on, you know, hey, here are the big names for the team. Here are your clear difference makers. Is there anyone heading into this matchup that we should be talking about that doesn't get the notoriety from everybody else nationally?
Well, if it's for the Saints, I mean, they've got a couple of receivers who've been kind of under the radar, one being Callaway. He's got three touchdowns, and he's come on a bit of late. They've got a young tight end, a guy, Juwan Johnson. He's got three touchdowns. He's probably only got, you know, 6-7 catches total, and three of them have been touchdowns. And those guys have kind of flown under the radar. And really, you know, a lot of that's because the Saints defense has really set this offense up in a good space offensively. They've given up some short fields, and the Saints have really cashed in the red zone. They're 13 of 14 in the red zone, which I can't remember a time covering the Saints, even when Drew Brees was at his best, where this team went a stretch where they were 13 of 14 in the red zone. So that's really been the key to what they're doing, and they've been able to do it with those two guys because those two guys have pretty good hops on them. You know, sometimes you can just throw a jump ball, which is, you know, what Jameis has done a couple of times, and they've come up with touchdowns for him. So I would say, you know, if you want to look at any guys, maybe Marquez Callaway, who seems to be rounding into it, maybe Juwan Johnson, who seems to be rounding into it, and another guy who Seattle fans might be a little bit more familiar with, Deontay Harris, who's a receiver. He had a punt return for a touchdown against the Seahawks a couple of years ago. He's really coming on as a receiver in this offense, especially as a deep threat. Now, he had a hamstring issue against Washington. You know, they had the bye week, so we'll see whether or not he's able to play. But if he's able to play, he makes this offense different because he immediately stretches the field. You cannot press him because if you press him and you miss, he's going to go the whole distance. So he's one of those guys who can really kind of paint the defense a little bit and stretch it.
All right, we only have, you know, maybe a minute left, but I just want to squeeze in one thing so that we can move the conversation forward on our end defensively, which is if there is one thing that Jameis Winston is susceptible to, or if there is a weakness or two Seattle's defense can try to exploit, what is it?
Well, he's like every other quarterback. Hurry him, hit him, yeah, hit him, hurry him, and get him off his marks. And then if you get him harried a little bit, you know, he didn't have success against Carolina. Carolina came with some blitzes that the Saints weren't prepared for, hadn't seen, and didn't adjust to. And so it made life miserable for Jameis that day. And the offensive line is missing, you know, two two of the starters or for the last game. So we'll see if any of those guys are able to come back. But he's like every other quarterback. If you can get the pass rush to him, if you can pressure him, you know, because he's seen enough now to where I don't know necessarily that you can confuse him, and he's confident enough to throw it away or to take the sack if he doesn't see what he wants to see. So I don't think he's so apt to take those chances. But if you get a lead on him and if you get the rush on him, then of course he's going to have to take a few more chances. He's going to have to be a little bit more risky, and that's when any quarterback can get in trouble.
John, we really appreciate the time, man. I know Stacy offended you early on, and I thank you for hanging in there with us. It got better. So
I gave you no Southern hospitality, apparently.
We appreciate it, John.
Yeah, but she did give me notice. She did give me notice.
She did.
I did. I let you know. I was honest with you. All right. He is John DeShazier, NewOrleansSaints.com. You can go read his work ahead of this one so that you can prepare yourself for Monday night's opponent. Thanks so much, John.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, that was your opponent preview. Now we're going to take one final look at the Seahawks ahead of this prime time matchup. Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle joins us to give us the latest. Then we all share our final thoughts heading into a huge Week 7 game. That's next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross, getting you guys ready for the Seahawks primetime matchup, a Monday night game between the Seahawks and Saints, this one at Lumen Field. Joining us right now to give us one final look at this team, it's Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. John, how are you?
I'm great, Stacey. How you doing?
Fantastic. We're glad that you could join us as we kind of wrap things up and take a final look at this team. Just from the outside looking in, what's going to be a major key for the Seahawks in this one, John?
You know, I think a big thing when you look at the way the Saints play defense is just function well on offense and not turning the ball over is a big part of it. We've seen, you know, the Saints take the ball away a ton. The Seahawks have been good at taking the ball, care of the ball in general, but they've been had, unfortunately, a couple of costly turnovers late in games. So I'd say just being clean on offense against a really good defense would be a great first step.
Hey, John, what are your expectations and what do you think the expectations are in the building for Rashad Penny?
I mean, I think everybody's eager to finally get him going. It's been a really unfortunate couple of years for him with all the injuries, and you know it's sad for him that you know that he was a guy they drafted in no small part because his injury history was so clean. And
yeah,
you know, John Shire always said he had one of the best medical grades they've ever put on a player, and he gets the NFL, and it's just been one thing after another for him. So this would be just the perfect time for him to kind of come out and maybe look like the player he was starting to become right before that ACL injury a couple of years ago. You know, it sounds like Alex Collins is making his way back this week and has a shot to play, but if he is banged up or if you just want to change things up a little bit and get a different look, having Penny available in full speed would be a big deal for this offense if he can get going. But that's also a really tough team to run against, so we'll see how that looks.
John, we need a definitive answer right now. Is Trey Brown the starter for this Monday night game? No dancing around it, John.
We know you know, John.
I do not know, but I'm going to say yes, he is the starter. A couple of reasons. First of which, he played really well. He looked good out there. And secondly, I mean, I know Pete Carroll did say Sidney Jones is going to do a little bit of work in practice, but if there's a competition there and it's close and one guy's banged up and limited, getting limited reps and the other guy's healthy, that might be the deciding factor. I mean, Pete Carroll wouldn't say who's starting today, but he said he's definitely playing. And, you know, in general, that's not a position you rotate guys. I know they did last week to get Trey Brown some looks, but normally that's an every down position. So if Pete Carroll's telling us today Trey Brown is for sure playing, that to me is a hint that there's a good chance he's starting.
Reporters spoke with Pete Carroll and Bobby Wagner today. Now, for listeners, we aired Pete Carroll, so you guys heard it. We didn't air Bobby Wagner, but you can find it at Seahawks.com. Bobby kind of made a comparison to the 2015 season. John, I know that you were listening to both of these. What did he mean by that?
Yeah, somebody brought that up. That was last time they were 2-4. It was that 2015 season. You know, that was the year that Cam Chancellor held out. They started 0-2, bounced back with a couple wins and lost 2 in a row, and they were 2-4, and as Bobby Wagner said, it kind of felt like now where everyone's writing that team off, saying they were no good, and you know they managed to rally and get it going. And he thinks this team can do that too. I mean, obviously the biggest challenge is they got to start that process without Russell Wilson. I mean, hopefully he's not out too long, but We know it's at least two more games, so they're going to have to find ways to win without their starting quarterback. But, yeah, I think the belief is still there, a lot more so in that locker room than maybe a lot of people on the outside watching. And, you know, they feel like they've started to turn a corner on defense with some things they did against Pittsburgh, and they've got some confidence that maybe they can get a couple home wins here and go into the bye with a 500 record, feeling a lot better about things.
John, and that's obviously something that you look at with that opportunity that's in front of them. I mean, gosh, it's such an important mark for them. And I also don't find it surprising to see that at this stage, with Geno Smith being the quarterback and the way that you watch the second half, I mean, Pete Carroll being pretty declarative about who they want to be offensively in terms of running the football, they've got quite the challenge that they'll face with the Saints defense in that regard. You know, what is the level of expectation that you have for the way that this offense is going to approach Monday night? Is that more just conversation from Pete Carroll in terms of we want to run it more and be more balanced like we've heard in the past? Or do you think that means we want to be pretty run heavy?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think they love what they saw, obviously, in the second half. And if you can do that and it takes some pressure off of Geno Smith, that's great. But we are also talking about the number two run defense in the NFL. The Saints are allowing just under 80 rushing yards a game. So, you know, you want to be able to run the ball, but you also don't want to be, you know, looking at third and 10 every time because you get stuffed at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, they're going to have to do it smart. But, yeah, they definitely know that if they can run the ball, set some things up, and just make things easier on Geno Smith, they're going to try to do that. And Pete Carroll talked about, you know, this isn't just hey, we need to run the ball because it worked for half a game. That was really kind of what he wants this offense to look like, especially with Russell Wilson out. So they're going to try it, but Saints are good stopping it. So they're going to have other plans too if they can't run the ball.
Hey, John, it seems like, you know, it's a small sample size. And, you know, in the very first game, Dwayne Eskridge gets in and carries, and hopefully he'll be back. And now Trey Brown's playing. And then last year, they really had a youth movement. I mean, every rookie pretty much played except for Daryl Taylor, you know. So, and, you know, significant contributions. I felt like in 2019, you guys were talking about this a little bit, Jake and Stacey, they kind of got away from that. Like, they didn't seem to trust Marquise Blair his rookie year. DK is really the guy that was out there the most. You didn't see Cody Barton and Ugo Mahdi and, you know, much Travis Homer or anything like that. Do you feel like that's kind of a trend that they're getting back to their ways of, you know, playing the young guys?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, some of that, I think they just really like a lot of these guys they've drafted over the last 2 years. And even that 2019 class, you know, as you mentioned, those guys didn't all get on the field right away, but they're starting to get a lot of contributions out of them now, and they like a lot of that group. And look, some of that is you draft the guys you like them, but it's also the reality of the NFL of you need those young guys to be able to play, especially when you have, you know, some of the highest paid guys in the league at their respective positions, and Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, and those types. That's kind of how the NFL works. If you're going to have some stars who are rightly paid at the top of their position groups, you need some young guys to step up and kind of be those bargain type players who make plays for you. But again, I think, you know, as we look back on this in a couple of years, that 2020 class, and granted, this year's is small, but they like the guys they got, but especially last year, I think that's going to go down in the class. It really helps this team for a number of years.
Yeah. He is Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. Make sure you check out his work, by the way, at Seahawks.com. He's got tons of updates on this team regularly, and I know that you all want to stay posted on that. He also joins us every Thursday for The Huddle. John, it's been fun talking to you.
It's been great talking to you guys, as always.
Bye, John. All right, that will do it for today's edition of The Huddle, this week's edition of The Huddle. It's a big one, you guys. Primetime Monday Night Football, Seahawks versus Saints at Lumen Field. I know we're all eager to watch a couple different guys in this game. Rashad Penny, Trey Brown. We talked with Jordan Brooks earlier. If you missed any of that, you can always listen back to it at 710sports.com. So for Dave Wyman, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been The Huddle.